saying, he is a chain breaker. Amen? Whatever the problem is, there is no problem in your life today so great that he cannot give you deliverance. But we have to turn to him, and we have to be willing to say, Lord, I need you. And we need to look to him for the principles that we live day by day. This being the day it is, a few weeks ago I woke up early one morning and I just laid there and some messages just started rolling. And this is the one that I just felt very strongly would be appropriate for a day like today. We've been looking at some critical issues. And one of the issues that we have to face, no matter what era we live in, is this issue of how do I balance the ambition with contentment. You know, in life's journey, we're faced with several dilemmas. And one of those dilemmas is this dilemma. How do I, as a believer, balance this issue of ambition? I mean, we have some college students up here that are getting ready to graduate, and they're going to be going on to some amazing things. And we have a high school student that's going to be recognized, that's going to college. But after she goes through basic, she's not even going to be able to stand up here this morning because she's drilling today in basic, you know. And when we left high school, I mean, how many of y'all left high school and said, you know what I hope to do? I hope to be an utter failure in my life. Okay, Brad, I saw that. The reality is that if you have any kind of gumption, any kind of dreams, you have ambition, and you should have ambition. The desire to make something out of your life. And yet at the same time, there needs to be contentment. And I want you to see a passage where the Apostle Paul, writing to his son in the faith, Timothy, in 1 Timothy chapter 6, tries to address this issue of what I call making a life, not a living. At stake is the difference between making a life versus making a living. The reality is, the cold hard fact is, it takes money and a lot of it today just to meet our daily needs. In the quest for a good life, though, we can lose sight of the most valuable asset in life. And that's what he begins this passage with. He says in 1 Timothy 6:6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. You know, as I was preparing for this message, I got my faithful concordance down, and I looked up the words profit and gain, and the reality is they're not very often used in Scripture. One of the few places that Jesus used the word gain was one day when he asked this crowd, what shall a man profit if he gain the whole world and then what? But loses his soul. So Timothy, or as Paul's writing to Timothy, begins this passage by saying, but godliness with contentment is great gain. It is great profit. But how do you get there? Well, you have to apply some principles. So he goes on to say, he says, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root. Now the NIV does a better job of translating here because it makes it clear. The love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Not of all evil, but all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Now, down in verse 17, he picks back up on this theme of riches and money, and he goes on to write these words. Verse 17 through 19, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold, now listen, of the life that is truly life. Now, I don't believe that Paul here was trying to say that they're going to earn their way to heaven. I don't believe he was saying right here that they'll be able to claim life, eternal life, but he was saying, in reality, what I've titled my message. He says, look, make a life, not a living. Make a life that when you look back over your life, that you will be able to claim that your life has been profitable. That it has been a life where you can say, hey, I've lived a good life. Looking over my life, I know that I have added value to this world, and as such, I can say my life has been well lived. In order to do that, though, we've got to apply some principles, and Paul shares five principles in these verses. Look at them. Number one, he just simply says, as he's writing to Timothy, he says, listen, Timothy, you brought no money into this world, and you won't take any with you when you die. Just realize, hey, money is something we use to be able to get through life, but the reality is, he says, we came into this world without anything, we're going out of this world without anything. Now, man has attempted to do an awful lot of things to take it with them, but the reality is we don't. This is one of the principles that sustained Job, a man of great integrity. So great was his integrity that God invited Satan to look at him and said, have you noticed my man, Job? Look at him. And he described him as a man of great integrity. And so Satan said, well, yeah, but look what you've done for him. I mean, look at what he has. All these children, all these crops, all these animals. I mean, anyone would serve you if you blessed them like that. And so God allowed Satan to touch him. And what happened? In one day, he got news after news. Your crops have been destroyed. All of your animals have been taken away. And ultimately, your 10 children were partying together. And a wind came up and the building they were in fell and collapsed on them. And they all have perished. And what did Job do? That song, Blessed Be the Name, comes directly from this passage. He tore his clothes. He put sackcloth and ashes and he bowed before God and he cried out. And he said, the Lord hath given and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He acknowledged the reality. As I came in with nothing, I'm going to go out with nothing. God gave, and now God has taken away. Blessed be his name. Somewhere along the line, I read that the Chinese have a practice that they burn things over the grave of their loved ones. Now, one particular person said they burn money. I did a little research on this week. I wasn't able to see that that was their policy, but they burn things that was valuable to them as a means of basically picturing this idea. Hey, when you die, you're not going to take it with you. I mean, all you got to do is go over to Egypt and look at the pyramids and the attempt on the part of wealthy rulers to surround themselves with things for the other life. And all they did was they made people rob grave robbers, right? How many of those pyramids haven't been broken into? Because you're not going to take it with you. You know, I was just thinking, I think when I get home, Mary Jane's sick again today. Y'all pray for her. Several of our folks are not here because they're sick. I think I'm going to tell her, though, when I die, write a $10,000 check and burn it at the grave. Some of y'all get that later, maybe, huh? You know, we've all heard the joke about the guys who got their, you know, this guy who got his friends to, you know, say they would put $10,000 in his grave when he died, and two or three of them did, and the last one, hey, he wrote a check and put it in there, you know? Can't take it with you. Number two, principle number two. Money should be viewed as a means, not an end. That's really what he says in verse 8. In essence, he says, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. What was he saying? He was saying, listen, the whole concept is that our basic needs are met. Now, for some of you, a bologna and cheese sandwich for lunch doesn't sound very good. For me, with a heart healthy diet that my wife has, and she just almost refuses to let me buy bologna, a bologna and cheese sandwich sounds great for lunch. And you know what? If I got done eating that bologna and cheese sandwich and a few chips and put down a Dr. Pepper, I'd have more than enough fat grams and calories to make it through the day. And it'd be a whole lot cheaper than some of you that's going to go out and get that ribeye and pay $30 for it. Huh? You get the picture? The point is. And this is what Paul was saying to Timothy. Hey, so long as we have a clothes on our back and food to meet our needs, it's the same thing that Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 6 of Matthew when he said, hey, do not lay up treasures upon earth, because those treasures can be destroyed. Moth and dust and rust doth corrupt. He said, lay up treasures in heaven where they cannot be destroyed. And then he went on to say, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. But he followed those words up in verse 25 with this illustration. He said, hey, don't worry about what you're going to put on. Don't worry about what you're going to eat. That's what the pagans worry about. He said, don't you know your Father will take care of you? And he comes down to verse 33 and he says, seek first the kingdom of heaven and his righteousness, and God will take care of the details. Money should be viewed only as a means, not an end. Jesus told the story recorded in Luke chapter 12 of a man who had such a bumper crop that he said, hey, I have so much, I'm going to build me some bigger barns. I'm going to put things away in those barns, and I'm going to retire. I'm going to sit back, and I'm going to say, eat, drink, and be merry. And in verse 20, Jesus said, and God said to that man, this night your soul shall be required of you. And who shall be all these things? Who will get them? Now, please hear me very carefully when I preach on this. And young people, I taught Eric Geiger when he was here as a youth minister, and he was trying to decide about Social Security or not Social Security, and I sat down, I said, here, let me show you $100 a month out of your salary. If you would just start right now and putting it away for retirement, when you get 65, you'll be a multimillionaire if you just earn the right amount of money by just putting that little bit amount. Now, I wasn't trying to tell him to cheat God. At the same time, I teach you, give God his tenth. Right? I mean, we've all known folks who learned the principle of properly storing up for the future. That's okay. But the concept is, does that become your treasure? The third principle that he teaches in verses 9 and 10 is money can be a dangerous trap. Not all that glitters is gold is a phrase I grew up hearing. And basically, it was another way of saying this very, very thing. What Paul is saying to Timothy, he says, listen, people who want to get rich can fall into all kinds of traps. And one of those traps in our day and age is lottery tickets, which leads to going to the boats, which leads to... Huh? I mean, in my tenure here, a former church member, it was publicly, you know, in the paper, went to the boats, won almost $500,000, and died a pauper. The reality is, when you begin to get your mind and you begin to seek to be rich, you can fall into all kinds of sorrowful behaviors. And that's what he says right here. He says, listen, it can be like a trap that if you're not careful, you'll find yourself trapped into a life that is miserable. Many years ago, in college students and that are graduating, you probably are too young to remember, there was a show that used to be on, The Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Did y'all ever catch any of those reruns? And then they would show these beautiful mansions and the cars and the lifestyle of the rich and the famous. You know, one of the people I think about is Michael Jackson. What kind of an estate did he leave? What kind of a place did he live in? And then he died, an overdose of drugs. Yes, I know they were given to him by a doctor, but the reality is if you get digging into his life, he surrounded himself with all those toys, and yet, did he have contentment? In fact, the bigger the toys, the less contentment a lot of times. The fourth principle down in verse 17 is this that he teaches in this passage. Money is a lousy and ineffective security blanket. Can I get any amens to that one? Anybody? Anybody in 2008 find your portfolio suddenly and you went, Boy, y'all really, you know, either I don't have any people with portfolios or you're doing a good job of hiding your emotions today. Maybe I was the only one, you know. Before it went all the way down, I moved my money in the annuity board. The problem was when it got all the way down, I didn't move it back. The reality is, y'all, that money, and that's what he says in verse 7, he said, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so, what? Uncertain. Is there any such thing as an absolute certain investment? No. You say, yeah, Pastor, I got a bunch of land and a house. Yeah, right now the values in Ruston are great, but you know, 20 years from now, will they be? Do you know? Now, some of y'all used to say, I'm dirt poor, that's all I got is 100 acres, and then they struck oil on your 100 acres. Wow! Talk about uncertainty. What used to be a poor owner of dirt, I mean, y'all, some of us are old enough to remember that shot, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies, and he was out there hunting, and he shoots this gun, and all of a sudden something comes bubbling up. Gold, black gold, they called it, right? Texas what? Texas tea. Y'all watched it a lot. You remember that, huh? Texas tea. Y'all getting the point, though? Pause and think about it. I mean, when you begin to say, hey, I'm content and I know I have enough, you'll be just like Rockefeller, who used to be the name. Now we could say Bill Gates, but I can't quote him because I don't think he said it. But Rockefeller, when asked one day, how much money does it take to be content or satisfied, to be secure? And what did he say? One more dollar. Well, the last principle is verses 18 and 19. Money can be a means to great reward. Here he's been talking about all the possible negatives, and then in verses 18 and 19, listen, I like the way the NIV does it. He says, command them, tell the people, make sure they understand this. One, understand that money will never bring contentment, it will never bring security, and it can be such a danger. Yet, as he closes this chat, this letter he's writing, he says to them, but tell those who are rich, make sure that they understand this. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. Money can be a means to great rewards, because he goes on to say, in this way they will lay up treasures. Isn't that what Jesus was saying in the Sermon on the Mount? Don't lay up treasures upon this earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. How do you lay up treasures in heaven? When you take the wealth that God gives you and you use it in such a way that you are blessing others. With every time you do that, you are laying up treasures in heaven. There are a lot of wonderful examples of individuals who knew how to do that. Maybe one of the more famous ones ended up in Longview, Texas. He wasn't born there, but in World War II, 70% of the land-moving equipment used in World War II was his equipment invented by him. He invented 299 inventions. He was the inventor of the bulldozer and many cranes and land-moving objects. His name was R.G. Letourneau. He also established a university that is still in existence in Longview, Texas, Letourneau University. He began giving 10% before he died. He was giving 90% of his profits and living off of 10. A multi-millionaire in his day would have been probably a multi-billionaire today. But he knew this principle. He didn't hoard wealth. He used it. And his own testimony was, I shovel it out, but God keeps shoveling it in, and his shovel is bigger than mine. And that's what God would have us to do. Realize that life is not made up of what we have, what we wear. It's who we are. Jerry, you're sitting back there. I'm not quoting you. I'm quoting something you sent on December the 23rd of 2007, an email that you sent to Sam. I don't know why you were sending an email at 8:49 on a Sunday morning, Jerry, but you did. That's what it says right here. But listen to this. And I want you to listen as a summing up of my message. This is a beautiful illustration. A group of alumni, all highly established in their respective careers, got together for a visit with their old university professor. The conversation soon turned to complaints about the endless stress of work and life in general. Offering his guest coffee, the professor went into the kitchen and soon returned with a large pot of coffee and an eclectic assortment of cups. Porcelain, plastic, glass, crystal. Some plain, some expensive, some quite exquisite. Quietly he told them to help themselves to some fresh coffee. When each of his former students had a cup of coffee in hand, the old professor quietly cleared his throat and began to patiently address the small gathering. You may have noticed that all of the nicer looking cups were taken up first, leaving behind the plainer and cheaper ones. While it is only natural for you to want only the best for yourselves, that is actually the source of much of your stress-related problems. He continued, be assured that the cup itself adds no quality to the coffee. In fact, the cup merely disguises or dresses up what we drink. What each of you really wanted was coffee, not a cup. But you instinctively went for the best cups. Then you began eyeing each other's cups. Now consider this. Life is coffee. Jobs, money, and position in society are merely cups. They are just tools to shape and contain life. And the type of cup we have does not truly define or change the quality of life we live. Often, by concentrating only on the cup, we fail to enjoy the coffee that God has provided us. God brews the coffee, but he does not supply the cups. Enjoy your coffee. The happiest people don't have the best of everything. They just make the best of everything they have. So remember, live simply, love generously, care deeply, speak kindly, leave the rest to God, and remember, the richest person is not the one who has the most, but the one who needs the least. How rich are you today? How are you spending your life? Graduates, I want to challenge you that you're going to find that God is going to bless you. And some of you he's going to bless with more than maybe others. But the issue is, what are you going to do with what God gives you? Will you share it? See, here's a principle found in Scripture. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 12 says, "For if the willingness is there, the gift is acceptable, not according to what one has, not according to what he does not have." The real issue is, what will you do with what God gives you? Talents, position, yes, eventually money. Will you invest it? To the body at whole, I want to ask you, are you giving as God has given to you? Our praise team is going to come and we're going to sing. I've chosen one of my favorite hymns in the hymn book. It's a simple song, but it's so powerful. "Because I have been given much, I too must give." Are you giving? Are you hoarding? As we stand together, we sing together. In this service right now, there may be someone that God has spoken to, and you know there's a commitment you need to make publicly. I'm here to receive you if you need to. For the vast majority of us, we just need to sing this song and sing it from the depths of our heart and truly mean it. "Because I've been given much, I too must give." Will you sing the song and sing it from your heart right now as we sing together? "Because I've been given much."